Now, NDE Radio, a weekly exploration of near-death experiences and similar encounters with the other side. Now, here's your host, Lee Whitting.
Welcome to NDE Radio with Lee Whitting. Whether you're listening on TalkZone, by podcast, through the archives of our ad-free shows on our YouTube channel, or by connecting through our Facebook page. From time to time, I like to read stories of NDEs and other spiritually transformative experiences, both from the files of the International Association for Near-Death Studies, and also from those sent to me from listeners to NDE Radio. The following story is based on an Algerian experiencer's report as he submitted it to IANS, and is unusual for the number of sacred deities he encounters during his NDE, and what appears to be an overlapping vision where spiritual dimensions encounter alien technology. The story is provided here anonymously. The experiencer writes, "My name is Malik. I am from Algeria. In 2002, I was working in a hotel establishment located in the Sahara in southern Algeria. One day, an unexpected event changed my life forever. That evening, I wasn't working. I went downtown, 15 kilometers from the hotel, to run some errands and have a coffee. Around 8:35 p.m., in complete darkness, I returned by bus. The driver kindly dropped me off on a nearby road, even though it wasn't an official stop. As I got off the bus, a sandstorm was raging. The streetlights around the hotel were off, and while I was trying to cross the road, I neither saw nor heard a car approaching, probably due to poor visibility and the noise of the wind. The car was driving at 80 kilometers an hour, according to the driver's statement, and the National Gendarme's report. Its headlights blinded me, and before I could react, it hit me. My body was thrown several meters away. My body was lying on the ground, and at that very moment, I experienced a state of expanded consciousness. I was more aware than ever. I realized that I could no longer move. While I heard people shouting loudly, calling for emergency services and saying, 'Your coworker has had an accident.' At that instant, I saw a truck approaching behind the car that had hit me. I was afraid it might run over me. I tried to move toward the rubble, but I couldn't. So I covered my head with my left hand because my right hand was fractured. I also had a double fracture in my right leg and fractures in my right ribs. Suddenly, a young girl appeared. She was crouched just above my head. I felt her hair brushing against my face. She said to me, 'Why are you covering your head?' I told her I was afraid of the light from the approaching truck. She reassured me, 'Don't be afraid of the truck. It's still far away. Look closely at this light. It's here to protect you.' Looking more closely, I saw a rectangular light that seemed to secure the entire accident site, like a protective dome. I felt a deep sense of peace. Coincidentally, emergency responders arrived at that moment. I was placed in a car. The driver, an officer of the National Gendarme, was working with a security guard who was still on probation. They seemed to know each other already. While they were transporting me, I was lying on the back seat. The young girl was still there, never taking her eyes off me. She kept repeating, 'Don't fall asleep. Don't close your eyes.' Meanwhile, my condition kept worsening. I could feel my throat filling with blood, and my breathing was growing weaker and weaker. As I found myself in a critical condition, I told the driver that I believed I was nearing the end of my life. Aware of the urgency, he asked me to recite the Shahada. I replied that I already had. 'I bear witness that there is no deity but God, and that Muhammad is his prophet and messenger.' I then asked him to drive faster to get to the hospital as quickly as possible. The young girl advised me not to speak any further. At that moment, due to the stress, my perception changed. The two passengers in the vehicle seemed to vanish from my field of vision. I felt as though I was floating alone at incredible speed, passing through a dark tunnel whose light gradually intensified as I moved forward. Eventually, I arrived at the hospital. In this altered state of consciousness, I had a vision in which I was wandering through a hospital corridor. I saw a colleague there who seemed upset, apparently due to a lack of staff available to provide emergency care. I also saw my own body lying on the operating table, surrounded by medical personnel. The doctor in charge of my care, who had been called in urgently, looked worried, just like the other medical staff present that night. The doctor addressed me by name. When he asked if I could hear him, I answered yes. He then assured me, explaining that although my condition was serious, it was not hopeless. He spoke about placing a silver plate between my teeth in order to reposition the fractures in my right tibia and fibula. In addition, he mentioned a thoracic belt to stabilize several fractured ribs, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 8th right ribs, as well as flail chest segments. I remember asking him for a moment to catch my breath before he proceeded. After I had regained a bit of strength, I gave a signal to indicate that I was ready. He showed me the X-ray results, explaining in detail the injuries and the steps to be taken for my treatment. After looking at the X-ray, I was told that the fracture was slightly misaligned by a few millimeters. I replied that it wasn't normal, and suddenly I heard a voice say, "What's going on? The anesthesia hasn't taken effect." That was the moment I realized I was floating above my own body. Those were the last words I heard in the operating room. Then the young girl appeared in front of me again and said, "Come on, we have to go." As soon as she finished speaking, I found myself in another hospital room, lying on a medical stretcher. My body was covered in blood, and I was screaming in pain. At the same time, I could hear screams echoing throughout the hospital. In that room where I was, voices echoed. I could see silhouettes made of light, but also others, darker. One of the voices kept repeating, "Help the young girl, she's drowning." That phrase haunted me. Beside me, the young girl was trying to signal something with her hands as if she were drowning, but I couldn't move or help her. Then suddenly a deep silence fell. I heard a female voice coming from the end of the hallway declare, "Make way, the Lord is coming, step aside and clear the path." As that voice got closer, I felt a divine presence. When I looked up, I saw four majestic figures surrounded by an intense light. One woman and three men. Among them, I recognized the Lord Jesus, the Prophet Muhammad, and the third introduced himself as the god Shiva. However, I did not recognize the woman. And suddenly, my body, which had been bleeding profusely, stopped bleeding. I saw the young girl who had accompanied me throughout this experience stand up on her feet. A tall woman with long hair said to me, "This is the second time I've seen you." I replied, "Yes, my Lord, but this time I was really in pain." That's when the Lord Jesus and the Prophet Muhammad came closer to me. They placed their hands on my chest. I heard a voice say, "Now you have grace." At that moment, a deep feeling of wholeness, peace, and well-being overwhelmed me. What particularly caught my attention was all the silhouettes present in that hospital. They were rushing to place their hands on the hand of the Lord Jesus. The young girl who was with me explained, "It's not your chest they're drawn to, but the energy they want to absorb." Then I heard a voice among the mask, "But how did he get here?" The young girl replied, "I brought him, and he could have been lost if the Prophet Muhammad hadn't intervened." The Prophet Muhammad then pointed with his hand and showed me scenes from my life. Some of them were painful memories I would have preferred to forget, things I deeply regretted. I won't hide from you that I remember very clearly the feeling of being judged unfairly. I cried out, "Why, after all the misery, suffering, and pain I've lived through, am I the one being judged again?" And I added, "I also want to judge everyone who hurt me." During an intense personal experience, I felt as if I were transported into an altered state of consciousness. A tall woman with long hair spoke to me, saying, "Get up and follow the hand of the Lord Jesus." At that moment, a strange sensation like an energetic push propelled me forward. Looking behind me, I saw my own body lying on a blood-stained stretcher. This vision was accompanied by an intense feeling of lightness and a sharp awareness of my own essence, distinct yet part of a universal whole. I was allowed to explore an unfamiliar space, but with clear restrictions. Certain paths and boundaries were forbidden under penalty of losing any possibility of return. The young girl offered to accompany me. She claimed to know a safe way back, and after a discussion among the presences, her offer was accepted. The young girl then approached me and asked me to hold her hand. "Hold my hand tightly and always keep looking straight ahead," she advised. As we moved along the path, I observed a ground made of a mix of red earth and golden sand. The farther we advanced, the more the ground seemed to transform, at times crystalline, at others indescribable. Eventually, we reached a vast platform where countless beings were gathered, silhouettes made of both shadow and light, sharing some human features. Among these entities were thousands of different biological forms. However, the young girl explained that only two groups had a significant genetic similarity with humans, and humans themselves were a minority. Intrigued by their posture, I asked her, "Why are they all looking at the sky?" She squeezed my hand, and with a smile full of genuine joy, she said, "Now is when the show begins." Intrigued, I asked her, "Why are you holding my hand so tightly?" She replied, "You'll understand very soon." At that very moment, we witnessed a spectacular display of luminous spacecraft. These ships illustrated the exploration of distant worlds, accompanied by narratives of new technologies that transcended our current understanding. These civilizations had discovered how to harness universal energies, a tangible manifestation of the synergy between advanced science and cosmic spirituality. Each demonstration triggered a collective awakening among the human-like species present. They instinctively recognized a higher wisdom born from the unity between their spiritual essence and scientific evolution. The rapid gathering of individuals, though fleeting, caused a commotion in this vast assembly of human consciousness, reflecting the urgency to absorb this cosmic knowledge. It was now humanity's turn to share its own legacy, our messages, written in the sky and sometimes veiled by clouds reminiscent of a springtime earth, reflected our hopes and aspirations. We projected the portraits of our prophets, our visionaries, and our scholars, revealing the symbiosis between faith and rationality. Among them were scientists, doctors, artists, and thinkers who had shaped our world. We also recognized familiar faces, and in that moment of unity, we felt immense joy. As our presentation came to an end, an unexpected chaos arose. The crowd, in a frenzy, dispersed in all directions. I too felt disoriented, lost in this sea of agitated souls. Looking at the young girl, I finally understood why she had never let go of my hand. She was afraid I would lose myself in that human confusion. Suddenly, the atmosphere changed. The sky, once bright, began to darken, a powerful metaphor for the fragility of our connection to the universe. The young girl then whispered urgently, "Come, we must go. Our time here is over. If we stay, we'll lose our way." Her words echoed like a spiritual call to move forward, not to linger in what belongs to the past. As we walked away, total darkness enveloped us, forcing us to surrender to our mutual trust and to the certainty of a future still unknown. After this traumatic event and near-death experience, I underwent a series of extraordinary perceptions that seemed to belong to both the spiritual and psychological realms. During the NDE, I found myself in an altered state of consciousness where I perceived a luminous path. A tall, feminine presence with long dark hair appeared several times. She asked me, "Do you know her?" referring to the young girl who had been with me from the start. I replied, "Yes." She then insisted, saying, "She is my daughter. Take care of her." Before sending me back to my earthly life, her last words were, "Remember, I am everywhere." After 24 hours in a deep coma, I regained consciousness in my physical body, feeling intense pain and a sense of confinement, as if my body were going to explode. This pain was greater than that from the initial accident. The physical rehabilitation lasted 6 months, and despite gradual improvement, the event left deep scars. For 19 years, I searched to understand this extraordinary experience, which was later recognized as an NDE in 2018. In 2019, I found the young girl mentioned in my experience, a flamenco dancer named Rosa. However, our interaction was brief and ended after a week. Today, 19 years after the event, I noticed significant changes in my relationship with society and myself. I experience heightened sensitivity as if I am constantly in reception mode, picking up invisible frequencies related to other dimensions or spiritual processes. Visits from the deceased have become frequent and uncontrollable, which is particularly exhausting psychologically and energetically. This situation has pushed me to explore further the links between consciousness, spirituality, and the still unknown scientific phenomena. And here the account ends. Now, I wanted to include this second story from my ends as a follow-up to last week's NDE radio show concerning animal communications and animal souls. This story about her cats was sent to Ions from a Ukrainian woman who dreamed prophetic warnings about the death of a pet cat. The woman wrote, "I want to share my experience of prophetic dreams. This is not a near-death experience, but these events also serve as evidence, at least for me, of the existence of life beyond the earthly realm. I feel compelled to share my story because it involves the efforts of higher beings to save an animal with the same urgency and compassion as the many stories of human rescue in your archives. For me, and perhaps for others, this is very important because there is so little information about what places animals occupy, both on this side and on the other side of the veil. A few months ago, before my cat died from an attack by stray dogs in my yard, I began to have dreams. I saw a house surrounded by nothing, no fence around it. I understood this symbol very clearly. I kept telling my mother that I was having recurring dreams of a house without a fence. You know, it's hard to convey a symbol like that. It's easier to describe the presence of something than its absence. I also felt that something ominous and dangerous was tied to it. Then I had another dream with the same symbol, the house with no fence. I clearly recognized its absence. A woman I had seen in a previous dream, she had appeared to me 4 or 5 years earlier when another of my cats passed away, came to me again. She pointed toward the forest, which was located uphill from where we stood. I looked and saw three dogs running. She said to me, 'Look, they're coming for you.' I woke up and thought the dream was strange, but I was so caught up with work and status and career that I didn't take the time to analyze it or even tell anyone about it. A few days or weeks later, I had another dream. Again, the same symbol, the house with no fence. The same woman stood next to me. I clearly knew it was my house, even though it didn't look like the one I owned. She stood with her arms stretched wide and shouted, 'No fence, no fence.' I woke up in terror in the early morning. I was lying on my back and realized that a real thing, a real being, my angel, a guide, or someone close to me had been speaking to me. Out loud, I said, 'But I do have a fence everywhere except the area near the lake.' Then I turned my gaze toward the window, which faced the unfenced part by the lake, and I instantly fell back into sleep. I didn't remember the dream until after waking. It came back to me much later. A few days or weeks passed again. In the next dream, I was lying in bed, very sleepy, looking toward the window. I felt a murderer walking outside. I thought, let him walk. It's not like he can get in here to me. I drifted into sleep. Then I saw something like a transparent blot moving toward me from the window. My last thought was, he killed me. I hadn't expected that I would die. I later forgot this dream as well. A few more days passed. On the eve of the tragedy, I was overwhelmed by a terrible fear that one of my other cats would be attacked by dogs. I truly didn't realize it would happen right in my yard, and to a different cat. On February 20th, 2025, around 7:20 a.m., during the exact time of my cat Lou Baumeier's death, I had the following dream. I was walking on a street on the far side of the lake. I was asking people if they had seen my cat, Lev. This is the cat that survived. Then I heard a voice, "Don't go there. There are dogs they might kill." But I went anyway and saw three dogs. Then everything disappeared. The woman from my previous dreams appeared again. She said, "Look, is it him?" She was holding something in her hands. I couldn't see what it was, but I knew we were talking about one of my cats. I said, "I can't see, but I'll try to feel." I placed my hands on the being she held, still unable to see it, and said, "Yes, this is Lev. This is my Lev." But she replied, "No, this is not Lev." I woke up. One of my cats was sitting at the glass front door, meowing. I knew something was wrong. I went to the door and saw three dogs in the yard surrounding Lou Baumeier. I ran outside, chased the dogs off, and saw them flee across the frozen lake, the only part of my yard without a fence. My cat lay there, his lower body paralyzed. He'd been bitten and was dying. At 7:20 a.m., when I woke up from the dream, only one veterinary clinic was open, the worst one, with the most inexperienced doctor. She didn't even think to give him pain relief. Instead, she yanked his legs, spun him on the x-ray table for over an hour, and kept telling me he was fine, that nothing was seriously wrong. She didn't even notice the wounds. She couldn't tell he was dying of shock. I had ended up with the worst vet in the city. When we returned home around 10:30 a.m., my beloved Lou Baumeier had died. But the dreams didn't stop there. The very first night after his death, I dreamed of him again. He joyfully jumped over a fence near one of the structures in our yard. I was hiding behind that structure, peeking around so he wouldn't see me. In my head, I heard a voice, "See, he's fine." Then I woke up. I couldn't understand for a long time why I tried to watch him without being seen. The following months were torment. I blamed myself for taking him to that incompetent vet, especially knowing that by 8 a.m. our trusted family doctor had already started his shift, but I hadn't been able to reach him by phone. I hated myself for allowing my beloved pet to suffer so much in his final hours. I didn't give him a peaceful death. I didn't even manage to get him pain relief. About a month or a month and a half later, I had another dream. I saw the lake and heard a male voice say, "There were two cats, one of them she saved." I still don't know what that means. At first, I thought maybe the incompetent vet had somehow saved Lou Baumeier's soul, even if she couldn't have saved his body, perhaps because his soul, so worn from the pain, could easily pass on and not linger near me, as pet souls are often said to do. But I'm not sure. I still don't know why the word saved was used. Then I shifted my focus from blaming the vet to wondering what my dear Lou Baumeier was feeling now. I asked a question out loud and opened a book at random, placing my finger on a word. The word was Don't worry. That night, I had the last dream related to this story. I saw nothing, but I felt what people might call nirvana, complete and utter contentment, so profound that I forgot who I was. When I woke, I realized I had never experienced anything like it before. It was perfect peace, love, comfort, joy, and abundance. My mind could not have invented such a feeling from any prior experience. I believe this was the answer to my question about what Lubomir is feeling now. For months after Lubomir's death, I didn't remember all the dreams that had preceded it, except for the one I had during the time of his death. I remembered all the details of that dream except the woman. I forgot even the very first dream with her from years ago. I started keeping a journal and writing down everything that led to the event. I wrote in my diary, "Why didn't I have any warning dreams?" A little about me. I've rescued cats for the past 8 years, and every time one of them was in danger or died, I would have symbolic dreams, like a living cat eating from the same bowl as one who had already passed away. I asked my angels, "Why didn't you warn me about Lubomir?" Then, suddenly, memories began to flood back. I slowly remembered all those dreams and their details, and the woman. I'm still trying to understand them. I never dreamed of Lubomir's death. I dreamed of my own death. In my research into life beyond, I learned that a soul can live multiple lives at once, and I began to feel that Lubomir was me, another part of me, another life I was living simultaneously. Otherwise, I can't explain why, in all those dreams, I sensed a threat to my own life. I'm still working through all of this. I've rescued many animals and some I couldn't save. But with Lubomir, I can't find peace. The guilt I feel is deeper than the ocean. I was being warned all along. I had the means and resources to build that damn fence. After his death, I hired workers, and within 2 days, the fence was up. Why couldn't I have done that sooner? And here the experiencer's account ends. And she thanks Ions and Dr. Bruce Grayson, saying, "Your work helped me survive this loss. For me, animals are my children." Her initial story had ended, but in a follow-up email to Ions, the woman wrote, "I remembered something. When I was sitting in the veterinary clinic, behind the door where Lubomir was still alive but had already fallen into traumatic shock, I too was filled with a strange sense of peace. I had an absolute certainty that everything was okay and would be okay. At the time, I just chalked it up to the fact that I trusted the vet who had told me that my cat was fine and there was no need to worry. I didn't even consider that it might have been something more, something beyond my own naivete or my psychological response to stress. Now I live with the hope that one of Lubomir's spiritual guides managed to carry him away before his pain became unbearable, since I couldn't do it for him myself." Her communication ends there, but it sounds as if the moment of shared death experience can happen between humans and their pets as well. My thanks to Ions for providing this report and for all the good work they do. If you'd like to hear this show again or any of our more than 500 archived ad-free NDE interviews, go to TalkZone's NDE radio site and hit the past shows button, or go to our YouTube channel, NDE Radio with Lee Whitting, where you can subscribe to and comment on the complete NDE radio library. And listen next Monday, 11 a.m. Eastern at TalkZone for more NDE Radio. I'm your host, Lee Whitting, saying once again, thanks for listening.